Bob Gill has spent his 60-plus year career obsessed by one problem: how to communicate through design. Over those decades, he's worked for George Harrison, Esquire, The Nation, 17, Fortune, and Glamour. He's written children's books, co-founded FFG, which eventually became Pentagram, the largest design firm in the world, and he wrote and designed the multimedia musical Beatlemania. His latest book, Bob Gill So Far, is just that, a retrospective of his greatest hits along with his thoughts about design and tenacity. It's published by Lawrence King, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Gill back to our show. Hi.
Hi.
You say that when you moved to New York after college in 1951 and started freelancing, it was easier to find work as an illustrator than a designer. That's no longer the case, is it?
No, I think illustration is much less used as opposed to photography. So,
and photoshopping.
And yeah, and other tricks.
So, but what happened then? The people weren't interested in having designers?
No. I think when you're first starting out, the most obvious places to get work are the magazines, because they need images all the time, and it's less of a big deal. But when you have to design something like a logo, that's requires more expertise and more confidence in the designer and so forth.
Well, in those days, didn't Americans have something of an inferiority complex? We thought that everything good was coming from Switzerland and places like that.
The distinction between American design, graphic design, and Swiss graphic design is very precise. Swiss are formal designers. Everything is the typography has to be impeccable, immaculate, formal, and so forth. And Americans, who are much more involved in advertising and communication, are interested in ideas and ways of selling. So this suited me, because even though I went to art school and along with everybody else assumed that what you wanted to do was a beautiful design, I soon realized that that's not really what I was interested in. I was interested in solving communication problems in an original way.
But when you started, you had a hard time establishing yourself. Didn't Alexei Brodovich, the art director for Harper's Bazaar, tell you that you shouldn't be a designer, you should be a photographer?
Absolutely. And fortunately, I thought that was the dopiest thing I'd ever heard, considering that he looked at my portfolio for 10, 20 seconds.
Maybe he was giving everybody the same advice.
Maybe.
And actually, that advice would have worked out later.
Maybe.
Because photography did wind up becoming the dominant thing in, nowadays an ad is largely a photograph and some typography.
And a layout. Also, the other thing which was interesting is at the same time every art student went to see the great Alexei Brodovich, the other person that they had to see when they got out of school was the great Paul Rand, who actually invented graphic design as we know it today. And it was funny that, of course, you weren't allowed for Rand to see your work. You left your work with the receptionist at the advertising agency, and then when the great man touched it, you were telephoned and told you could come and pick up your work. So when I picked up my work, there was a note on it saying Mr. Rand wanted to meet me. Of course, very exciting. So this guy came out, and he held his hand out, obviously to shake my hand, and so I reciprocated. And he just looked me in the eye for what must have, well, it seemed like an eternity, but it was actually 20, 30 seconds, which is still a long time for silence. And he ended up saying, "Stay in this business." So I made him wait the same 20 seconds, and I said, okay. And that was my...
But he didn't offer you a job.
No.
Well, you eventually realized that you wanted to focus on design as it, quote, communicates an opinion to the viewer. Now, how do you do that? How does design communicate an opinion?
I'm very glad you asked that question. I've been waiting to get that question. How you do it is not to know what design should look like, not to have any visual prejudice insofar as possible. So when you get a problem, if it's, say, a dry cleaner, it has to do with a dry cleaner, you don't sit at your computer waiting for inspiration, or you don't look through books on design for a clue. You go to a dry cleaner, and you sit there with no idea, with no preconception about what it should look like. You sit there until you have something interesting to say. And then the fun begins. If you have something genuinely interesting to say, then you just listen to what the statement is, and it designs itself. It's a miracle.
And it always happened?
Always. Well, sometimes it takes longer, and sometimes it happens fast, and it didn't happen as soon as I started working, but eventually that's the process that made the most sense for me, and that's what I teach.
But it also does help when you've established a name for yourself. People are much more willing to listen to you. I suspect, based on my experience when I used to be in that business, that when you started and you came up with this brilliant solution to the problem, the client looked at it and said, well, I don't know.
My wife doesn't like green.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think...
Can we make the logo bigger?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's also one of the myths, though, because I honestly think that if you have an interesting, original idea that communicates precisely what the client wants to say, I think it's actually easier to sell it, even though it's very surprising to the client.
You've created many logos and corporate identities for companies and organizations. And they always said, wow, you just hit it. That says who we are by using that typeface that way?
No, of course not. Of course not. It's up and down. But as I say, I think it's a lot easier to sell a logo that actually says exactly what the company is about, as opposed to, you should excuse the expression, the WNYC logo, which is just somebody's idea of something that looks interesting.
You don't think our logo is doing the job?
Well, I think it looks contemporary, and I think it represents the state of the art, but it's not what I would do because...
What would you do, put a microphone in?
I have no idea what I would do. As I say, my process begins by starting from zero.
My guest is Bob Gill. The chances are that you've seen his work and never realized it. We're happy to have him back on our show. By the way, if you haven't seen his work and you want to have some sense of what it looks like, we have a slideshow on our show page at WNYC.org. And, of course, there is this new book called Bob Gill So Far, which has lots of different things from over the course of your career. When you look back at the early things, do you say, oh, gee, what was I thinking? Or do you understand why you came up with the solution?
No, as a matter of fact, a part of the fun of doing 18 books is in a later book, I look back at other work and I reproduce it again and try to do it better. That's the fun of it.
Does it matter if the product or the company you're working for is something that you don't like or you don't admire? If I just read a thing in the New York Times, I guess last week, somebody was concerned about going to a concert at a concert hall that had David Koch's name on it, and he wasn't sure he wanted to go to see the Nutcracker because he objected to David Koch's politics. But I could see that extending all over the corporate world.
Well, I
guess
you
know the company's a polluter or something?
Of course. I guess I draw the line at if a client is Hitler Youth or cigarettes, obviously, because I think it's such an evil institution, I don't think I would be interested in that. But as a matter of fact, I'd put it this way, that one of the questions I'm always asked is, what is your favorite sort of job? I mean, would you rather do a poster for peace than something, you know, for toilet paper? And the answer is that I don't have any preconceptions about what a good job is. It's what a good solution is. You never know from the problem whether you're going to end up with a really superior solution. So, you know, aside from Hitler Youth and, as I say, and other things like that, I'm a hired gun, and that's what I do.
And I suspect Hitler Youth haven't approached you recently with a request for you to design a logo for them.
No.
But you left New York and went to London in 1960. Was the design scene more attractive to you?
No, it was just a wonderful bit of dumb luck. I was going on a holiday to Europe, and there was an ad, and you should excuse the expression, the New York Times.
You don't like their logo either?
No. I hate everything, as a matter of fact. But anyway, there was an ad, and it said that the owner of a British advertising agency was at the Algonquin Hotel interviewing possible candidates for an art director. So I thought it would be much more fun to work in Europe rather than just have a holiday. And that's... They hired me, and I never looked back. It was just the most wonderful experience.
You wound up founding FFG and the Designers and Art Directors Association in London, and then got involved with the Beatles?
Yes, I did their first record sleeve, which was Wonderwall. It was not a Beatles record, but it was Apple number one, their first recording, and it was a George Harrison thing, a score for a movie called Wonderwall.
Mm-hmm. You had played piano yourself. Did you see a connection between the art and the music, or is it just coincidental?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know.
You've also talked about being an admirer of Helvetica, probably the most controversial typeface in some people's minds because it represents so many corporate things, but also the MTA, the sanitation department, American Apparel, whatever. First of all, I wonder about Helvetica. It's very similar to a British typeface called Standard or Folio.
Yes.
Why does one typeface suddenly become the typeface?
First of all, I'm surprised that you associate me with liking a particular typeface because this is actually against my process.
Everything? You like Wide Latin? You like Airport?
As I say, it depends on whether it's right for the job. But just as a word about Helvetica, it happened to be very 60s. It was the hot typeface in the 60s. And I was probably just as guilty as many other designers favoring Helvetica if I thought it was appropriate. If not, obviously, I didn't. But anyway... when it comes to favoring typefaces, I think I'm probably least guilty of being prejudiced toward one or the other.
So it's really a matter of what typeface does the job.
Exactly.
And something that I might even consider ugly might very well work in a certain job.
Of course. Absolutely.
Now, you talked about not liking the New York Times logo, not liking WNYC's logo. Give me an idea of what you think is an effective logo, whether you designed it or somebody else designed it.
In fact, it reminds me of when I had lunch with Paul Rand, who, as I say, was the president.
So later you developed a relationship with him.
Yes, sure. While we were having lunch, he told me a wonderful thing. He said I was his favorite designer. And this was a few months before he died. And just before he died, he gave a big lecture at Cooper Union, and as happens in these cases, there are questions after the talk, and one of the questions was, "Mr. Rand, who is your favorite designer?" And he stood up and he scratched his chin. He said, "I don't have a favorite." Bastard.
You were sitting there waiting.
Waiting.
How prepared for the real world were you when you left school?
I wasn't. I guess that's the short answer, because I would, like every other art student, I was trained to do what the establishment thought were beautiful things. And I realized that to have a preconception about what is beautiful is very limiting. The fun is to invent new beautifuls every time you have a new job.
Well, I mentioned the Swiss school earlier. I remember that in art schools, that was the standard.
Absolutely.
And every magazine that came in
was
Swiss.
Yeah.
You wondered whether there was ever a chance that vulgar America would ever catch up.
It was funny teaching in Switzerland, which I did from time to time, and it was fun to go against the fact that everybody knew that Helvetica was the only typeface to use, and I had some fun trying to throw a hand grenade into that.
How did you come to do Beatlemania?
Jules Fisher, who's Broadway's leading lighting designer, was a student of a very dear friend of mine called Robert Rabinowitz. And when the manager of Arrowsmith decided that there was money to be made in getting four kids on the stage, he went to Fisher and he said, "Why don't you put four kids on the stage and we'll make a fortune?" And we had to tell him that you have to do more than that. And so that's what happened.
Bob Gill will be signing books at the Art Directors Club Gallery this Thursday at 6:30. That's at 106 West 29th Street. There's an exhibit of his work starting there today that runs through Friday. And you can see a slideshow of his work on our show page at WNYC.org.